Good afternoon. I call the meeting of the Human Services Policy Committee together. It is 1 o'clock. We do have a quorum. The first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes. Chair Noor, would you like to move the minutes,
Chair.
Please? Chair Noor moves approval of the minutes from January 11th, 2023. Any questions or amendments? Hearing none, all in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion, the minutes are approved. Next, we have our only bill on the hearing today is House File 16 from Representative Hollins. If you could like to come to the testifiers table. I will let folks know that this is a bill that does have a lot of interest from all sides on it. We do have a long list of testifiers today. We are going to be keeping everyone to 2 minutes. And with having the two-minute limit on testifier, that should allow enough time for an amendment that's going to be and for any discussion from the members. And the intent is that we will be dealing with this bill and passing it on at 2. We'll be voting by 2:30 on it. So at this point in time, I would like to, seeing this is the first hearing, and seeing Representative Hollins, you are not a member of the committee, I will move the bill to put in front of us to re-refer House File 16 to the Committee on Health, Finance, and Policy as its next stop. I also see that we have a author's amendment, so we'll deal with the author's amendment. Since this is the first committee stop, this is pretty traditional that we have the opportunity for the author to get the bill in the format they would like. So I will move the author's amendment labeled A1. Representative Hollins, would you like to explain your amendment, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, the author's amendment is just a technical change to include the appropriate cross-reference.
Okay, thank you. Any discussion on the author's amendment? Hearing none, all in favor of the A1 author's amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The amendment A1 is approved. So we will now go to House File 16 as amended. Representative Hollins, if you'd like to start your testimony, we will then go to the testifiers and then take questions after all the testifiers. Representative Hollins.
Thank you so much, Chair Fisher, and thank you, committee members. I am super nervous. This is my first time presenting a bill in person, although it is my second term. I am here today with a long overdue bill to ban conversion therapy in our state. I want to be absolutely clear that conversion therapy is not therapy at all. It's been denounced by every mainstream medical and mental health association, including the American Medical Association, the American Psychological Association, and the American Academy of Pediatrics. Conversion therapy includes a range of dangerous and discredited practices aimed at changing a person's sexual orientation or in efforts to change a person's gender identity or expression. It preys on the fears of parents and does irreparable harm to children and young adults. This bill seeks to prevent children, teens, and young adults from being coerced into treatments which are ineffective and lead to depression, decreased self-esteem, substance abuse, self-harm, and suicide. It also seeks to help prevent parents from being taken advantage of by deceptive agents of the conversion therapy industry. This bill does not affect religious or individual prayer practices, and the restrictions only apply for paid services rendered. I also want to note that there are 20 states and the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, and more than 75 cities nationwide that have restricted this harmful practice. And in July of 2021, Governor Walz signed an executive order that banned state funding going to conversion therapy, but he did not ban the practice entirely. We absolutely must move past this idea that queer people can choose their sexuality and gender identity and let them show up as their full, authentic, glorious selves. Minnesota has long been a champion for the LGBTQ+ community, and we have a chance to continue leading in this area today by passing this bill. I know we have many testifiers, so I will go ahead and turn it over to them.
Thank you very much, Representative Hollins. As a reminder, testifiers, there will be a strict two-minute testifier per person that will make cut off if we start running out of time. We will be having a timer here by Nick Strumel-Langer, who will be running the timer. When the timer goes off, we ask that you finish your sentence. And at this point, I will be calling people up. The first person will be Christy Grammy from DHS. The next person on deck will be Kat Ron. and would ask that people, as I call your name, is queuing up, that you get ready to come up as the next person. So, Pat, Ron, if you'll be ready for your testimony as soon as Christy is done, that way we can move as quickly as possible, get everybody's testimony in for the full 2 minutes. So with that, if you'd like to introduce yourself, please, and who you're with, and start your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Christy Grauman. I'm with the Department of Human Services. So the department supports House File 16, prohibiting the use of conversion therapy for youth and vulnerable adults across the state, as well as in our medical assistance and Minnesota healthcare programs. There is nothing inherently disordered, broken, or in need of curing for LGBTQ individuals. And it is our belief at the department that regardless of sexual orientation or gender identity, that all people are worthy of unconditional love, acceptance, and access to high-quality behavioral health care. As Representative Hollins mentioned, conversion therapy is not really health care or therapy at all. This is a practice that's widely viewed as pseudoscientific and sadly founded in fear and shame. I don't know if members have had a chance to look recently at the Minnesota student survey that came out just this past summer. If you haven't, I would encourage you to, but the results of that survey are showing an alarming increase in suicide ideation, with the most recent data indicating that about 30% of 11th graders have seriously considered suicide at some point in their life. So that's a pretty staggering number, and the trend is even more severe for LGBTQ students. So if we are truly serious about taking care of our children and people who access our behavioral health care services, we need to make certain that LGBTQ individuals have access to evidence and resiliency-based mental health services. And as Representative Hollins mentioned, the governor started this endeavor in 2021 with his executive order, and so we're just really appreciative to the legislature for codifying this important practice and making sure that it doesn't continue in Minnesota. And thank you, Representative Hollins, for bringing this forward, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for prioritizing this very important issue.
Thank you very much. Next, Kat, Ron, on deck would be Dr. Margaret Charmley, if I'm pronouncing that right.
You did.
Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Kat Roan. I am the Executive Director for Outfront Minnesota, our state's largest LGBTQ advocacy organization. I'm here as a representative for our organization, as a proud member of our LGBTQ plus community, and as a resident of the state of Minnesota for more than 20 years. I am here in strong support of HF 16, which seeks to protect vulnerable Minnesotans from so-called conversion or reparative therapy. However they are framed, these practices are unsupported by scientific evidence, ineffective, and harmful. That is why they are opposed by every major medical and professional organization in the field, and Outfront believes it is critical that our state's LGBTQ community has access to competent and effective care when they seek it. Over the past couple of years, we have seen steps to move forward towards a ban on this practice here within the state. And as the Minnesota Department of Health noted in its review, it is the state's obligation not only to do no harm, but to take action to secure the health and well-being of those within its bounds. Today, we have an opportunity to take that action. LGBTQ people are part of the fabric of every community in the state. We are, in fact, legislators and members here within this chamber, and it is time to move forward on this. It is time to end this harmful and ineffective practice, and I am pleased to offer our organization support for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next will be Dr. Margaret Charmley, if you'd like to introduce yourself, who you're with, and then on deck will be Elena Niehoff.
Good afternoon, Chairperson Fisher and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Margaret Charmley. I am here on behalf of the Minnesota Psychological Association and the American Psychological Association to support House File 16 to ban conversion therapy. We have five reasons for doing so, and I'll jump right into them, and I'll try to talk quickly because of the two-minute limit. Number one, conversion therapies, as they have been referred to, are unethical. Number two, they mostly don't work. Number three, they cause harm. Number four, they fail to meet acceptable standards of care. And five, they're discriminatory. So let me elaborate just a little bit. Our ethical standards prohibit us from making false, deceptive, or fraudulent statements about the scientific or clinical basis for our services. Conversion therapy and its correlates are based on the false and deceptive premises, beliefs, and implications that same gender or same sex attractions and romantic desires are signs of a mental disorder that can and should be treated and changed. By 1974, both the American Psychological Association and the American Psychiatric Association made a decision that homosexuality, as they called it back then, is not a mental illness. So that begs the question nearly 50 years later, why, if something isn't broken, are some people trying to fix it? 50 years ago, it was denounced. Next, I'm going to go to... just trying to limit my remarks. Conversion therapy doesn't work. The American Psychological Association has conducted systematic and exhaustive reviews of reputable, peer-reviewed scientific research to determine whether or not attempts to change sexual orientation and gender identity were effective. Mostly they are not. That's the conclusion. Now, why is it that some people might want to change their sexual orientation or identity or have distress about it? And the prevailing understanding is that for some people, sexual orientation and gender identity can be fluid, not for everybody, but for some. We have also come to learn that the largest segment of the LGBTQ community is bisexual. So people that may claim that their sexual orientation has changed may in fact have inherently an underlying bisexual orientation that has evolved for them. Number three, conversion therapy is harmful. And perhaps more disturbing than its ineffectiveness.
Thank you for your testimony.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Next we have Elena Niehoff, and on deck is Seal Dwyer.
Elena is ill today, and okay. So she's not here.
Okay. Thank you. Next we have Seal Dwyer, and it looks like if you could identify who you are, what you are, and why you're here versus Seal, and then we can start the testimony.
Yes, I am Kat Roan, again, Executive Director for Outfront Minnesota. Seal Dwyer is one of our board members with Outfront and a licensed therapist who is not able to be here in person and because of the setup of this room was not able to testify remotely, but wished for me to offer remarks on their behalf.
So you'll be reading their testimony then?
Correct, okay. Yes.
Thank you very much. Go ahead and add this 2 minutes, I will cut off.
Yes, thank you. This is the written testimony from C.L. Dwyer, who is a licensed marriage and family therapist in private practice in St. Cloud. I work primarily with the LGBTQ population in Minnesota, and more specifically with LGBTQ people with trauma. Every day, I work with folks who struggle with mental health concerns. The rates of mental health concerns in the community are high. 73% of LGBTQ youth report anxiety symptoms, and 58% report depression symptoms. 82% of LGBTQ youth wanted mental health care. 45% have considered suicide, and 14% have attempted suicide in the last year. Those numbers more than double in the population exposed to conversion therapy. 28% of LGBTQ youth exposed attempted suicide in the past year. That is nearly one-third of all exposed to conversion therapy. Conversion therapy is also commonly used as a threat with LGBTQ youth with similar results. 27% have attempted suicide when threatened with conversion therapy. The number one thing that people can do to lower the suicide rates amongst LGBTQ people is be accepting. Affirming homes and schools cuts that suicide rate in half. Conversion therapy is touted as mental health treatment, but any treatment that results in nearly one-third of participants attempting suicide should not be utilized under any circumstances. If you have any questions, you may reach me. Thank you.
Thank you for the testimony. And one thing, I'll pause for a second and back up to the person that mentioned that Elena was not going to be here. She has the option, because she could not make it, to please submit written testimony. We will take written testimony up to 24 hours after this meeting. We will post it online. Just make sure that she's aware of that option, knowing that sometimes people can't make it. We want to be accommodating as possible. So thank you. Next, we will go to Mary Amuwit. And then from there, Ryan Pouts will be next.
Good afternoon. My name is Mary Amiot. I'm from Rochester, Minnesota, and I'm speaking in opposition to HF 16. A biologist and Nobel Prize winner made headlines this week when she asserted basic biological opposition to the claims of radical transgender ideologues. German developmental biologist and Nobel laureate Christiane Nusslein-Volhard explained that the basic biological principles regarding sexuality disprove the notion of transgenderism. She said all mammals have two sexes and man is a mammal. She stated there's the one sex that produces the eggs and has two chromosomes, that's called female, and there's the other one that makes the sperm and has an X and Y chromosome, that's called male. She was asked whether people can change gender, and her reply was, that's nonsense, it's wishful thinking. There are people who want to change their gender, but they can't do it. People retain their gender for life. She also warned of the dangers of prescribing hormones to change and assist people to look more like the opposite sex. She stated the body cannot handle it well in the long run. Every hormone you take has side effects. Taking hormones is inherently dangerous. And she goes on further, but this bill is based on, I believe, ideology and not biology. It is unscientific and a danger to the minds, bodies, and souls of children and vulnerable adults. We need bills to protect children, especially in the school setting, from gender confusion that is being aggressively pushed through our education system. We need the opposite of what it states in this bill. Our children in Minnesota are being unrelentingly attacked by gender confusion from very early ages. This is egregious and it is evil. It is unscientific.
Thank you. And thank you for your testimony.
Okay. Thank you for listening.
You're welcome. Next, we have Ryan Fouts. On deck is Ray Parker.
Good afternoon, committee members. My name is Ryan Fouts. I use he, they pronouns. I'm genderqueer, and I'm the executive director of Reclaim. As a child or adolescent, one of the hallmarks of healthy development is experiencing love, support, and acceptance from your family and caregivers. This security is the foundation of later development as young people find their broader place in society. When youth are told that part of their identity is not real, unacceptable, or even sinful, the security of this primary attachment is broken. Youth's ability to find their place in society is disrupted by the devastating impacts of depression, anxiety, substance use, homelessness, and suicide, all of which carry grave personal and social costs. At Reclaim, we've worked with young people living in culturally and religiously conservative homes who have preemptively run away to avoid the possibility of conversion therapy. Another young person we're serving is not out to her family because of literal fear for her life. She is afraid of death because members of her extended family have fallen victim to honor killings because of their LGBTQ identities. This young person's parents force her to wake up every night to pray for her salvation. If the governor's executive order ends, we're confident these young people would be subjected to conversion therapy, and we know as mental health professionals that their ability to achieve healthy outcomes would be minimal. As one of Minnesota's only resources focused on providing mental health care to queer and trans young people, Reclaim knows what quality mental health care looks like. Quality mental health care acknowledges that young people have the capacity to figure out their identity. Quality mental health care supports a youth's autonomy. Quality mental health care supports young people in finding and being their true, authentic selves. Conversion therapy is not quality mental health care. It is immoral, it is unethical, and for the sake of the young people we serve, I ask you to support this bill to ban it. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next we have Ray Parker, and then on deck is Dr. Ellen Kennedy. Please introduce yourself and go ahead.
Hello, my name is Ray Parker, and I object to the HF 16 bill for so many reasons. The first is that by prohibiting any conversation that alerts an individual, child, or vulnerable adult to the dangers of various transgender treatments is abhorrent, evil, and wrong. The FDA does not approve the use of puberty blockers in children as they are unsafe. They can cause brain inflammation, permanent blindness, and along with many other adverse effects is the inhibition of brain development. The irreversible mutilation of genitals and lifelong drug therapies seems extreme to me. And according to Walt Heyer, who wrote an article February 2nd, 2016, in the Journal of the Witherspoon Institute, it states a task force commissioned by the American Psychiatric Association did a review of literature on the treatment of gender identity disorder. The quality of evidence pertaining to most aspects of treatment in all subgroups was determined to be low. The review of more than 100 international medical studies of postoperative transsexuals found no robust scientific evidence that gender reassignment surgery is clinically effective. These individuals, shortly after the painful surgeries, detrimental drugs, and so many called professionals advocating this alternate lifestyle, became suicidal. In fact, according to the research done at Johns Hopkins, these transgendered individuals are 40% more likely to commit suicide after gender reassignment. And the biggest losers are the young children that are being taught from age 3 and younger that they're not who they are, that they're not who their parents think they are.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Next is Dr. Ellen Kennedy, if you'd like to step up and introduce yourself. And on deck is Dr. David Kirby.
I'm Dr. Ellen Kennedy, the Executive Director of World Without Genocide and an adjunct professor at Mitchell Hamlin School of Law. I speak today on behalf of a member of my own family and for all others who are marginalized because of who they are. We have heard that there are efforts to change people's orientation through conversion or reparative therapy, and we've heard clearly about the harms. I want to highlight significant sources of opposition to conversion therapy. First, cities and states. As Representative Hollins mentioned, 20 states have banned it. These 20 state laws were nearly evenly passed by both Republican and Democratic governors. 102 cities and counties in 15 states have now passed bans, including in 11 Minnesota cities. Second, the United States Supreme Court has affirmed that it is constitutional to ban conversion therapy. Third, every major medical and mental health organization in the United States condemns the use of conversion therapy on young people. We have heard the American Medical Association, the American Psychological Association, and so on. Fourth, the major United States legal organization supports banning it, the American Bar Association, which passed a resolution urging all state and local governments to ban it. Fifth, at the international level, the United Nations has declared that conversion therapy is degrading and discriminatory. Finally, a national Reuters poll showed that a majority of those surveyed want conversion therapy for those under age 18 to be illegal. These sources of opposition include Republican and Democratic governors and legislators throughout the country.
Thank you for your testimony. You're welcome. Next, we have Dr. David Kirby. On deck is Reverend Chris McArdle. If you'd like to introduce yourself, welcome to the committee. Please start your testimony.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Several points today. The therapy ban bill is totally...
Don't forget to introduce yourself. I apologize.
I wanted to first say hi to you. Dr. David Kirby, clinical psychologist here in Minnesota. I've got four main points, if I get to them. The therapy ban bill is totally unnecessary for professional mental health providers. It's like applying suntan lotion when you're already wearing a long-sleeve shirt. All counselors are already governed and held accountable by the ethics of our professional boards. Why do we need further governing driven by political agenda? Secondly, as a doctor of psychology, I've never approached the sacred counseling relationship with my imposed agenda. I am there to serve my clients, not vice versa. In fact, I tell my clients at the outset that I am not here to change you, but to listen to you, care for you, and respect your self-selected goals. Over the last 38 years, I've worked with transgender children and adults, as well as gay-identified men and women. I've never attempted to impose some template of conversion on them. Never have my colleagues ask our clients. Thirdly, I've worked with clients whose childhood bodies were sexualized by same-sex abuse, and so they later associated sexual arousal with the same gender. These clients have taught me that SSA caused by childhood sexual abuse does not mean that they want to be or must be gay. They tell me that attraction does not equate to identity. Yes, their bodies were sexually awakened by same-gender abuse, but these individuals do not want past abuse to dictate their future identity. HF-16 discriminates against these children, preventing them from healing past sexual abuse. Lastly, didn't your grandmother ever tell you that two wrongs don't make a right? HF-16, with premeditation, affirms one population while disaffirming another. It imposes the restriction on one population that it is attempting to remove from another pre-selected population. Just finishing my sentence.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Next we have Reverend Chris McArdle, and then on deck is Nate Oiloyi. If you'd like to introduce yourself, welcome to the committee. Please start.
Thank you. I'm the Reverend Chris McArdle, pastor of the First Congregational Church of Anoka. Thank you, Chair Fisher and committee members, for the opportunity to testify today in support of House File 16. I speak to you today as a straight, cisgender, ordained minister of the United Church of Christ, but I do not profess to speak for all Christians. I speak instead at the behest of my congregation, which celebrates LGBTQIA plus persons as beloved, whole children of God. But I don't want you to vote on this bill based on anyone's religious arguments. I simply want you to recognize that the church is far from monolithic on this subject. My education and experience indicate that Christians who support conversion therapy tend to do so on a narrow misunderstanding of a handful of brief passages in the Bible that lead them to perpetrate violence against their neighbors. I assure you that every one of these Bible passages is at best ambiguous in their meaning, and to claim they speak authoritatively about queer people is to force modern prejudices onto an ancient context. In fact, historians have discovered that the word homosexual was only included in the Bible's Revised Standard Version by mistake. In my time as a pastor, 13 years, I have cared for people who have survived conversion therapy in its many forms, from the private therapy in a person's office all the way to the horror known as corrective rape, wherein gay children are sexually assaulted in order to cure them. No matter the form in which conversion therapy comes, it is harmful, as many health professionals have reminded us today. Other Christians may claim otherwise, but my faith assures me that our diverse sexualities and genders are beautiful in God's eyes. I urge you to reject such prejudice, embrace the best practices of our health sector, vote in favor of House File 16, and finally ban the destructive practice of conversion therapy for minors and vulnerable adults. Thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you for your testimony. Next up is Pastor Nate Oiloyi, and then on deck is Matthew Shirka. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and start your testimony.
All right. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Nathan Oilo, and I oppose this bill. As an adolescent, I experienced same-sex attractions. Knowing that homosexual practice was inconsistent with my religious faith, I chose to explore my options with the help of qualified mental health professionals and pastoral caregivers. I was not forced. I was not coerced. I was not abused. I was honored and loved, and that I was given the power of choice and the dignity to think for myself. In addition to professional and pastoral help, I benefited from many books, curricula, and conferences that supported my desire to bring my same-sex attractions into agreement with my religious faith. 25 years later, I still look back fondly on all the resources that were available to me, all of which set me up to live the life I wanted. Furthermore, as a pastor, I've worked with many young people over the past 20 years who are questioning their sexual orientation or gender identity, just like me, and they also wanted to bring their sexual orientation into agreement with their faith. These young people were given the same love, honor, and dignity afforded me in my youth, the power of choice and the dignity to think for themselves. There are many in this state who have found freedom from unwanted same-sex attractions and who are now enjoying marriage and family or celibacy. I'm standing with and for each one of them. We want our stories to be heard. We are from Minnesota too. We want the opportunity to share our stories, and we want the same freedoms and protections afforded everyone else in the state. It is not the place of Minnesota legislatures to hinder anyone from providing simple information and care to people who are questioning their sexual orientation or gender identity. There are many in this state who desire the input of faith communities so as to make well-informed, wise choices regarding how to navigate their same-sex attractions or gender dysphoria in a way that honors their religious faith. We are not frauds. Our stories are real. Thank you.
You're welcome. Next, we have Matthew Shirka. On deck is Dr. Angela Katie Gepfried. Welcome to the committee. Go ahead and introduce yourself and start your testimony, please.
Yes, thank you for having me. My name is Matthew Shirka. I'm the co-founder of the Born Perfect campaign, which is a national campaign representing survivors and working with states across the country who are interested in passing such bans against conversion therapy. And I'm also with the National Center for Lesbian Rights, a civil rights organization who works on the legal cases representing survivors who have been through conversion therapy. You were all handed out a document today that is a really important letter. It's a letter signed by 25 former conversion therapists who no longer practice so-called conversion therapy and are in support of banning conversion therapy here in the state, and they are in support of this bill. We hear from survivors every day, including myself. I'm one of the 700,000 people that have living in the United States today that have been through conversion therapy as reported by the Williams Institute at UCLA. When we hear from survivors every day, we hear firsthand experiences from those survivors, specifically here in Minnesota. And we're now reporting that there are 63 active conversion therapists in the state. 40 of those 63 are licensed professionals, which is specific to this bill. And there's about 40 organizations within the state of Minnesota that have a referral program that work with licensed professionals. I myself went through 5 years of conversion therapy by a licensed practitioner. My parents did not understand and know or ever heard of conversion therapy, but they did their due diligence by wanting a professional to oversee myself as a patient. So my story highlights a lot of those harms, and I wanted to just the highlights of that is that from age 16, 20 to 21, my parents spent $30,000 on my conversion therapy. I was supported through Viagra pills and during sex with women. These are things that we hear from stories from other survivors all the time when children are being misled by so-called professionals who hide behind their licensure. We also see that parents are mostly to blame, that in conversion therapy seems to be dividing up families. Usually have to blame the mother or the father.
Thank you for your testimony.
Yeah, thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Next we have Dr. Angela K. Gopford, and then on deck is Jean Merceberger. Welcome to the committee.
Great.
Please introduce yourself and start your testimony.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Chair Fisher and committee members. My name is Dr. Angela Cade Gepford. I am a pediatrician, the chief education officer, and medical director of the Gender Health Program at Children's Minnesota. I appreciate the opportunity to join you today on behalf of Children's Minnesota to express support for House File 16 prohibiting conversion therapy for children and vulnerable adults. Before I start with my written testimony, I just want to ground us in two things. One, we are not here today to debate gender-affirming care. There has been several pseudoscience facts presented about that. That's not what we're here to talk about today. We're also not here to debate the validity of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender identities, some of which you've heard about today. What we are here to talk about today is parents or legal guardians bringing children or vulnerable adults to someone for help, and instead of being given scientifically based care, they are being given a harmful and discredited practice. What we are not talking about is adults like Nate consensually seeking guidance from a spiritual community to align their identities with their beliefs. With my colleagues at Children's Minnesota, we care for LGBTQ kids and youth in our hospitals, primary and specialty care clinics, and emergency departments daily. In my role in the Gender Health Program, I partner with parents and caregivers as they are working to understand their children who are exploring their gender expression, their gender identity, and their sexual orientation. I have firsthand seen the damaging effects of conversion therapy just described on patients and their family members, which have included escalated suicide rates, increases in self-harm practices, and long-lasting psychological harm. What we in the medical community know is that differences in sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression are a normal part of human development. Conversion therapy is harmful because it is rooted in the belief that these differences are wrong and should be fixed. As you've heard from several other people today, conversion therapy for LGBTQ youth is not effective, not evidence-based, and not ethical. We in Minnesota right now have an opportunity to protect LGBTQ kids from this dangerous and harmful practice, and we absolutely should. Our LGBTQ kids deserve more than to be protected from this type of harm. They deserve to thrive. So thank you. As a pediatrician, a member of the LGBTQ community, and a parent, I want to thank you, Representative Hollins, for your leadership and committee for hearing this bill today. Thank you.
Next, we have Jane Merstberger. On deck is former Representative Hunter Cantrell. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and start your testimony, please.
Thank you, Chair Fisher. My name is Jean Merstberger. I live in Bloomington, Minnesota. When I was 39 years old, I made a choice to leave my husband and children to enter a lesbian relationship. Confused at the time and in deep depression and a state of loneliness, I thought lesbianism was the answer to the need for my love, or the need for love. But after 5 years of being in a relationship with a woman, I found myself in a deeper state of depression, confusion, and pain. I turned to a Christian therapist for help and am forever grateful for her work in helping me work through my confusion and pain. Without her help, I wouldn't have been able to be reconciled to my family. I wouldn't have been able to sort through the reasons behind my confusion. I am grateful that as I had the choice to walk into lesbianism, I equally, and equally as important, I had a choice to walk out of lesbianism. And in that choice, I needed help and found it. This bill is true that children are vulnerable, more vulnerable than I was at 39 years old. Children and vulnerable adults, such as I was, need help. I beg you to not take away from those who seek help that right. I ask that you oppose this bill. And I just want to say one other thing, that right now in the state of California, the Supreme Court, there is a case that's coming up by Chloe Cole, who is transgender and began her change at age 13. She is now 21, I believe. She is suing all the people involved in her conversion, or in her, you know, process. This will be a precedent case. And it basically is saying, similar to what you're saying today against us, that harm is actually being caused by having people change.
Thank you for your testimony.
So you need to look at that. Chloe Cole.
On up, we have former Representative Hunter Cantrell. On deck, we have Marilyn Baker. Welcome to the committee. Great to see you again, sir.
Nice to see you, too.
Please introduce yourself and start your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Hunter Cantrell. I'm a former state representative. First, want to begin by thanking Representative Hollins so much for all of her tireless work on this bill. You make me proud, and you make us all proud. And thank you as well, Mr. Chair, for your advocacy, too. This bill is a culmination of years of refinement to ensure that not one more child or vulnerable adult in Minnesota will suffer from the devastating practice of conversion therapy in our state, and that all Minnesotans are protected from the charlatans who would seek to deceive patients and families into thinking that there is some cure for being gay or being trans, or that such a cure is necessary. I am gay, and being gay, trans, non-binary, and in fact every identity within our big, beautiful LGBTQ plus community is not something to be suppressed, but rather in the spirit of love, compassion, and our shared human dignity should be uplifted and protected. This is especially true within the dynamic of patient care, as healthcare practitioners should be held to the highest standards of care and should practice based not on bias or prejudice, but in the pursuit of empowering patients to live their full, authentic lives in the safest, happiest, and healthiest manner possible. An irrefutable scientific consensus has long established that there is no therapy or practice that can change someone's sexual orientation, and for a healthcare practitioner to engage in such a practice as conversion therapy is nothing short of malpractice. Please do not mistake this as being a statement bill or a solution in search of a problem. Conversion therapy is being practiced throughout our state to this very day and at this very moment. With each day that passes without this bill becoming law, more children are suffering from conversion therapy and the utterly devastating long-term mental health consequences of the trauma being inflicted upon them by practitioners who do not care about their health or safety. These consequences range from feelings of self-loathing and difficulties building relationships to committing suicide. That, members of the committee, is not health care, but an arcane form of torture that has no place in the pursuit of health. Fundamentally, you as a legislature have a constitutional right and legal responsibility to regulate the practices of healthcare professionals and to protect members of the public, especially children and vulnerable adults. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for your testimony. Next up is Marilyn Baker. On deck is Troy Stevenson. Not seeing Marilyn. If you're listening, please, you can submit written testimony. We will move on to Troy Stevenson then. And on deck is Karin Miller. The table right here next to Representative Holland. No, that's all right. That's all right. Welcome to committee. Thank you for being here today. If you'd like to please introduce yourself and start your testimony.
Well, first, I'd like to thank the chair and the members of the committee for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Troy Stevenson. I'm the director of advocacy and government affairs at the Trevor Project. The Trevor Project is the world's largest LGBTQ youth mental health and suicide intervention organization. We're here to testify in favor of HF-16 today. We served over almost 4,000 contacts last year who were in crisis between the ages of 13 and 25. LGBTQ youth who are facing suicidality right here in Minnesota. And one of the ways in which we plan to, or we attempt to end youth suicide, LGBT youth suicide, is by dedicating ourselves to ending conversion therapy around the country. In our 2022 National Mental Health Survey amongst LGBT youth between 13 and 25, we found that 6% reported experiencing conversion therapy, with another 11% having been threatened with it. In both cases, whether threatened or having actually gone through it, 28% of those had attempted suicide in the past year alone, as opposed to 11% of LGBTQ youth overall. It's a huge number, and think about what that means. There was also, I'd like to point out, and we can provide this after the testimony if needed, JAMA Pediatrics, which is a peer-reviewed journal of the American Medical Association, published a study last year that used economic numbers, and it showed that there was a direct cost to the American people of $650 million on what equates to snake oil in pseudoscience. And the indirect cost of depression, suicidality, and hospitalization and therapy after this was over $8 billion. This is an industry that preys on money, taking money from people, from families, and from young people. And keep that in mind as you vote. And thank you for your time.
Welcome. Thank you so much for your testimony. Up next is Karin Miller. On deck is Macy Darden. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and start your testimony.
Yes, thank you. You're welcome. My name is Karin Miller. I'm a wife, mother, and educator, and I'm thrilled and honored to be here to speak before you today. Thank you very much for your time. As we discuss HF-16 today, we must remind ourselves that the government cannot legislate what people believe. The government cannot seek to legislate or control how people think. Any attempt to do so is a gross violation of our First Amendment rights. In order to be free, we the people must have choice and options within the bounds of what is legal and moral. We must not forget that true freedom goes both ways. In order to be free, people must have the ability to go this way or that way, or to choose option A or option B. To eliminate one option entirely, be it A or B, eliminates freedom. HF 16 seeks to eliminate one option, counseling that moves in a homosexual or heterosexual direction. It would only legally allow counseling that supports homosexual orientations. It's important to note that medically transitioning is not without serious risks, and transitioned individuals are committing suicide at a remarkably higher rate than the general population. So it is critical to allow access to a full range of counseling options and trust individuals to make the decision that is best for their own personal health and sexuality. After all, if we can claim my body, my choice when it comes to abortion, then we can also make the same claim when it comes to conversion therapy. The logic behind the support of HF1 and HF16 is completely untenable. You cannot have it both ways. In regards to minors, no one should be sexualizing our children, whether towards heterosexual or homosexual behaviors. The least you can do to protect minors is to leave all options available to them. Let's not allow our children to become victims in the battle over sexual ideology. Legislators, if you truly believe in health freedom, you must vote no to HF 16. Prove to your constituents that you trust them to make the best decisions for their own health and sexuality, and that they can trust you to protect their First Amendment rights. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next, we have Macy Darden. On deck is Austin Ott. Hi, good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and start your testimony.
My name is Macy Darden. I'm a third-year medical student at the University of Minnesota and a future physician. I am also a queer woman. I'm a lesbian, and my sexuality is not a pathology. My joy is no less joyous, and my love is no less valuable because of this fact. I've seen firsthand the harms that can be caused by conversion therapy. When I was young, I lost a friend. I'll call him Steve. Steve was the kid in class who made everyone smile. He was the kid who everyone wanted to play with. He was a natural leader. He created this game called Magic Mountain, and we'd all pick which animals we'd want to be, and we had special powers, and we'd fly around the playground and have little battles. As we grew up, it became apparent that Steve was more fabulous than most. And when he came out as gay at school, he was actually celebrated. No one was surprised. We always knew Steve was special and awesome. His parents thought otherwise, and his mother was a local minister in our community and sent him to a conversion camp, told him that he could be cured, that he could be saved. He was gone for a really long time, or it felt that way, and he never really came back. When he did, he was just a shell of the person he was before. It was obvious to everyone that the Steve we knew was gone, and that in his place was this child who was drowned in self-loathing and self-hate. And a year later, he tried to take his own life. But Steve survived, and something changed. His family finally decided to accept him as who he truly was, as their gay child. All of that pain, all of that suffering, all of that conversion therapy was for nothing. Steve was never saved. He was never cured. What happened to him was that the minds of the people around him changed. And that's what gives me hope, the ability for people to change their minds. If a devout and well-respected minister can change their mind and accept their child for who they are.
Come on.
Okay.
Thank you. Next, we have Austin Ott, and on deck is Luca Grappoli. Hi, welcome to the committee. Thank you for being here. Please introduce yourself, and please start your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Fisher and the committee. My name is Austin Ott. I'm a second-year medical student at the University of Minnesota Medical School, and I'm speaking to you today as a future physician, a member of the queer community, and a transgender person to urge you to support House File 16. Growing up, I was consistently told that being gay was shameful or immoral, and transgender people were supposedly so offensive that I only knew of them by the slurs they were often called. I knew, however, that I was gay and queer and trans and all of these beautiful things from a young age, but I sat silently with the depression and the anxiety that often comes with being told that who you are fundamentally as a child is wrong. In high school, I was more open about who I was, and the messaging of sickness and disease and illness became more intense and more targeted. None of these efforts to change who I inherently am were based on any scientific evidence. Many speakers today have highlighted the numerous major medical organizations who oppose conversion therapy and support banning the practice, including the American Academy of Pediatrics and our very own Minnesota Medical Association. Conversion therapy has been repeatedly shown to have harmful effects on social, mental, and physical well-being, especially for children. Not only was I told that I was damaged, but that I was failing at fixing it. Why couldn't I do better? Why couldn't I try harder? I reached my breaking point, and I tried to kill myself. This should not be any surprise to you, as LGBTQ plus people are at increased risks for suicide compared to their peers because of social stigma. A study done by UCLA's Williams Institute showed that lesbian, gay, and bisexual people who experience conversion therapy are nearly twice as likely to attempt suicide, and this number is higher for transgender people. As a future physician, I understand the imperative that our children and vulnerable adults, that we protect our children and vulnerable adults from the irreparable physical and social harm that is caused by conversion therapy. This practice is not evidence-based, and instead it instills in our most hopeful and inspired youth the destructive lie that they are sick and that they need fixing. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up we have Luca Grappoli, and on deck is Sydney Lowe. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and start your testimony.
Hi, thank you very much, Chair Fisher and board members. My name is Luca Giacopoli, and I oppose this bill. As an adolescent, I was sexually abused, thinking that all girls were victims and males were abusers. My young and distorted, undeveloped brain concluded that the process of transitioning to the goal of sex reassessment surgery. I lived as a trans male for 34 years. Years later, I met a woman, fell in love, and we went to church. I was surprised to be welcomed into the arms of a loving church where I began to understand God's plan for my life. As I continued, several women began caring for me. As my heart began to feel safe with them, I also accepted them into my heart, and I accepted Jesus into my heart. I found inner healing through my relationship with the Lord and with these women. Once the healing came, I realized I no longer desired to be transgender, but I felt safe to be the woman that I was created to be. God is perfect at converting the soul. Therapists are not. I think that we can all agree that no one should be abused in therapy. Some in the LGBT community claim to have been waterboarded or treated with electric shock therapy. Are those the procedures that you want to make against the law? If so, why are you going against therapists? Did you know that there are no therapists who do conversion therapy in Minnesota? Did you know that there are no lawsuits filed in Minnesota from people being damaged by this so-called therapy? I've offered to help pay any legal fees for anyone who claims to have been damaged by this therapy, and not one person has taken me up on it. Isn't that interesting and telling? The ban on the so-called conversion therapy has created a situation where therapists are afraid to see anyone in the LGBT community out of fear of being sued. If you pass this law, in essence, you will become the abusers. Permitting only affirming types of therapy leaves no room for a serious discussion of the long-term medical consequences of pursuing trans surgery or hormone therapy. Children must have the right to be informed. Worst of all, if you make it illegal and telling the LGBT community that they have no right to explore therapy, then you are the very ones discriminating against them. Minnesota should not tolerate you abusing families and seeking to help anything that they want. If they are unable to get help, then the blood of their hands, the blood will be on your hands.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Sydney Lowe. On deck, we have Senate Judge Yoakum. Hi, welcome to the committee.
Welcome. Hi.
Please introduce yourself and start your testimony.
My name is Sydney Lowe, and I am a queer woman and second-year medical student at the University of Minnesota. I was born and raised in Minnesota. Mother's side, small-town farmers, and father's side, Hmong refugees. In my family stories, I have seen how our Minnesotan communities have welcomed people of all backgrounds, especially during divisive and turbulent times. And I'm asking us all to do the same thing again in the name of protecting our LGBTQ youth. When I hear the term conversion therapy, I'm reminded of the importance of this bill because it will prohibit fraudulent and deceptive advertising. And that is exactly what the name conversion therapy is. Conversion therapy is not therapy. It is abuse. It is unscientific and unsupported by the medical community, disavowed by esteemed organizations like the American Medical Association. There has been no peer-reviewed evidence that shows it to be effective. And instead, it has been found that youth who undergo conversion therapy were more than twice as likely to have attempted suicide and more than 2.5 times as likely to have attempted suicide multiple times in the past year. In conversion therapy, youth are subject to physical, psychological, and even sexual abuse. Some practitioners have used so-called aversion treatments, such as inducing nausea, vomiting, or paralysis, and even electrically shocking children. Youth are taught to hate themselves. They're feeling shame towards their identities. This isn't therapy. This is not what I have learned in medical school and not what I will practice as a physician. As a future physician, I choose science and love. As a Minnesotan, I want to prove the phrase Minnesota nice in the kindness and acceptance I will show all patients, especially the LGBTQ ones. I have a moral and ethical responsibility to oppose any dangerous practice that will only serve to harm the diverse identities that Minnesota should be celebrating, and so do all of you today. So please pass the bill HF16 and protect our community and youth.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next we have Senate Judge Yoakum, and on deck is Katie Jedula. Hi. Welcome to the committee.
Hi, hello.
Please start your testimony. Introduce yourself and please start your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Fisher and members of the committee. My name is Sunny Judge Yoakum. I'm a medical student at the University of Minnesota, a constituent from South Minneapolis, and a queer woman. I'm grateful to be here today to advocate for this legislation and to share with you a story of survival of my best friend, Abby. From the ages of 10 to 12, Abby was forced by her parents to attend conversion therapy in the basement of a church. For 2 years, she was subjected to significant abuse from the two therapists. During the sessions, Abby was forced to partake in chemical aversion therapy, where she consumed emetine, a drug that induces vomiting, while viewing pornographic images. She was hooked up to electrodes on her feet and shocked, leaving her with lifelong repercussions in the form of PTSD. Under the guise of therapy, these 10-year-olds were made to practice sexual re-education with the opposite sex, which involved children engaging in sexual acts before the age of consent. The details of these re-education practices Abby is still unable to speak about over a decade later. Why was she subjected to such abuse? For kissing her female friend at summer camp, the experimentation of a child. Abby is one of two surviving children from the original group of 16 in that church basement. The other 14 have committed suicide. As a future physician, I know these practices are not medically sound and leave lasting harm on the children subjected to such abuse. As a friend, I have witnessed firsthand how conversion therapy has caused tremendous harm, trauma, and death. I'm thankful that my best friend is alive and thriving and queer. I urge you to support this legislation and protect future LGBTQ plus youth from conversion therapy. No child, regardless of their background, sexual orientation, or gender expression, should ever endure such abuse. Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you for your testimony. And then we have Katie Jedula. If you'd like to come forward, please introduce yourself and begin your testimony. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you. My name is Katie Jedlow. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm a third-year medical student at the University of Minnesota. I'm a lifetime Minnesota resident and constituent of District 61A. Medical professionals have a role to provide equal access to quality health care for all patients, especially marginalized communities, including the LGBTQ, trans, and gender nonconforming communities. When we first started medical school, we took an oath to do no harm. Conversion therapy has been proven to cause harm in practice and advertising of services intended to change a person's sexual orientation. Further, conversion therapy is not based on empirical evidence, nor does data support its efficacy or effectiveness in reducing same-sex attraction or relationships. I identify as queer and can confidently say I've never felt safer than within my community of LGBTQ plus folks. I've always felt empowered to live my truth and be comfortable in my own skin. This kind of love and queer joy is infectious and unmatched. Every LGBTQ plus youth deserves to experience this acceptance and opportunity to grow in a safe space that embraces their authentic selves. We are not a disorder that needs to be fixed. We are a brave, strong, supportive, beautiful community with each individual perfect the way they are. Being gay has taught me how to love without reservation and fully embrace every aspect of myself. It's time we offer that kind of love and understanding to our LGBTQ plus brothers and sisters, rather than subjecting them to continued violence. As a future physician, this bill directly correlates to the well-being of children and vulnerable adults in addition to their mental, emotional, and physical health. I stand against conversion therapy and will continue to work alongside my peers to provide a safe, welcoming, and healthy space for all. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I'd like to thank all the testifiers that we've had today. We've heard some very emotional testimony. I want to say thank you to everyone for taking the time and putting themselves out there. I would like to remind people, for those who have not testified but would like to submit testimony, we will take written testimony for the next 24 hours. Please make sure to send that to our committee administrator, Nick Stumo Langer, and he will make sure that is posted and distributed to the committee. In the meantime, we will move forward. We do have an A6 amendment. Representative Keel, I see that you are offering the A6 amendment. Representative Keel moves the amendment. Go ahead. Representative Keel, would you like to move the A6 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I will move the A6 amendment. And I would also ask that we have a roll call.
Okay, certainly. Representative Keel has moved the A6 amendment. There will be a roll call. And we'll turn it over to Representative Keel for her presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The government does not belong in a counselor's office. The law violates the freedom of speech in a very private setting. This is a personal conversation between both the counselor and whoever is seeking the counseling. This hurts children and vulnerable adults. House File 16, some kids get to go to counseling. Others do not. This is a blatant violation of the First Amendment right. You cannot discriminate based on a viewpoint, and that's exactly what this bill does. It's not okay to say some kids can talk about their feelings and others are not allowed to do so. The A6 amendment that I am bringing forward would prohibit gender transitional medical services for minors or vulnerable adults. I find it interesting in some of the testimony where a few of our medical students pointed out that people can change. If we allow some of these surgeries while students, children, are trying to figure out who they are, which is typical of, if you've raised children, you know this is typical of every child. They're trying to figure out who they are. And these are damaging, lifelong procedures. And the intent of this amendment is to not allow those things until children are old enough to make those personal decisions for themselves. I think we acknowledge many times when we're talking about how old students are, decisions made, that we've even acknowledged that 25-year-olds, our children don't really have clear thought process until they're well into their early 20s. 25-year-old is what comes to mind in my conversation. The other concern about this bill is that consumer fraud in here it's too broad. It includes nonprofits, ministries, youth conferences, books. Are we going to really start saying books are illegal? Transition should be talking with children, we should be talking about leading children to not be doing harmful practices in general transition surgery. Irreversible, documented damage. The intent of this amendment is to make sure that we are caring for children, that we are helping them in their growing up years to decide who they are and what they're about. I don't know about you, but I can think of all the things I was going to do as a child that I never got around to doing, but things that I wanted to do for a while. The same goes from when we are deciding things such as, our leanings toward just life in general. So with that, Mr. Chair and Representative Hollins, I would submit the A6 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Keel. Representative Hollins, your feedback, please.
Yes, thank you, Chair Fisher, and thank you, Minority Lead Keel. Data from more than a dozen studies of more than 30,000 transgender and gender diverse young people have consistently shown that access to gender affirming care is associated with better mental health outcomes, and that lack of access to such care is associated with higher rates of suicidality, depression, and self-harming behavior. Major medical organizations, including the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, the Endocrine Society, the American Medical Association, and the American Psychological Association, have all published policy statements and guidelines on how to provide age-appropriate gender-affirming care. And all of those medical societies have found such care to be evidence-based and medically necessary. And for all of those reasons, I would advocate a no vote on the A6 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Hollins. Next on the list I have is Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Hollins, for bringing this bill. And I wanted to take a minute to address this amendment. This is a hearing about conversion therapy, and into this hearing has come a bill to ban an entire world of healthcare. Gender-affirming care is safe, tested, effective, necessary, complicated, and deeply personal. Gender-affirming care is supported by every major medical organization that works with children and adults, including the American Medical Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. Political efforts to remove life-saving healthcare access for vulnerable communities must be opposed. Conversations like the one we are having today often paint a desperate picture of trans or queer life. But experiencing life as a trans person, non-binary, gender expansive, or any LGBTQ identity is a beautiful, unique, and precious thing. I am grateful to be trans. And I will oppose any effort to erase my community. I hope you will join me in voting this amendment down and supporting this bill.
Thank you. No other hands at this point. Representative Engen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, and thank you to everybody in the crowd here today. We heard you, and we believe you. And what I'm fearful of is that, I heard Austin say something that was actually really, really profound. He said, quote, "There's a misconception that we are broke and need fixing." And I think my main concern with this bill is that we might be replacing one form of telling people that they're broke and need fixing with a potential other form, that we're saying that we must go down the path of gender reaffirming care via healthcare, via surgeries, via hormone treatment blockers, and that could actually affect somebody down the road. And to deny their existence and their truth as well is somewhat concerning to me. So I'm just curious as to if this bill truthfully does pass, how will this impact the choices that those folks can also make? And will it deny them the opportunity to seek alternative cares?
Representative Engen, is that a question for the author of the bill or just a general?
Yeah, sure. I'll ask it to Representative Hollins.
Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Chair Fisher, and thank you, Representative Engen. I think I am a little lost on the question. Is this to the A6 amendment or is this to the bill in general?
I'll ask this to the bill in general, please.
Okay. You know what I would say is because we've got the amendment before us, I'd like to park this until we have the amendment done first.
Sure.
And that's more appropriate at this point. So.
Sure.
Thank you. Representative Edelson. No.
Sorry. Thank you, Chair. I was just going to respond to his comments, but I can hold if we want to do the amendment
first. Yeah, let's finish the amendment first. Is there any other questions or comments to the amendment? Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Chair, sorry. I guess the question that I have is because I'm just unaware of it, again, as a father of three kids that grew up, and I knew that during those formidable years in middle school especially, my kids were very, very sometimes challenging. If my daughter's watching, she knows what I mean. And to say that, not that she was confused about this subject matter, because this is very important stuff. And we care about this a lot. And I have seen in my work around the state with opioids and substance use disorder and mental health that this is real stuff. This is painful. And the suicides and the mental health stress is real. But what we're talking about here with the amendment, I believe, is the medical procedures that would happen when you are at a younger age that some might say is, should we allow it to go that far? Is it 10 years old? Is it 12 years old? I need help understanding that. That's where I want help, because I think we ought to have a balance where we hear the challenges of parents scared for their children's future when many of them have been confused for a bit and then they are not. Some are never confused and they'll know exactly what they want. But it's that period of time that's very, very, very tenuous and very confusing. Puberty is raging inside of them and they don't know what to feel. So I asked the question maybe to the author, doesn't it seem reasonable though that the amendment is, when it comes to those procedures, is permanent, it's real? And how do we want to deal with that question for really people in that period that they just, because there's no going back then. So this isn't about this isn't about mental health counseling. This is different than that. Help me understand that, if you would, Representative Hollins. Silence.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Baker. I think that's it's a fair question. I think that when we look at, and I don't have the language right in front of me, but I did read it previously, when we look at what we call gender-affirming care, there was really a broad spectrum of what is considered gender-affirming care. And to say that it is purely surgical procedures that cannot be undone is totally incorrect. And I am by no means an expert in this, but I know from the experience of people that I am friends with and colleagues with that it is an incredibly long process that also has a lot of counseling aspects to it, as well as therapy. And so I don't think that when we are talking about saying that there is no gender-affirming care, that typically, especially for younger people, is just saying that it is okay for you to feel the way that you feel. And that is something that a counselor does, not something that we surgically enact, right? And so I think that what you're saying and the way you phrased it and the way that you're coming at this question, I really truly respect your concerns. And I'm the parent of several young kids, so I understand what you're saying. But I think that what we need to do is look at that a lot more closely. And I don't think that it really belongs here in this conversion therapy bill. I think that if we truly have concerns about this, it's a learning opportunity for yourself, but also for me, to learn about what gender-affirming care looks like and how it is incorporated and at what ages what process goes through. Because I certainly don't know enough about it to, you know, point blank say, nope, we're not going to do this at all. Because I think that that would just be overstepping. And also because, you know, all of these medical associations say that gender-affirming care for young kids is actually beneficial for them. And so I'm going to trust the science and empirical data that's been provided to me over my gut instincts about what I think is right or wrong.
Thank you, Representative Hollins. And Representative Baker, I would like to add to that is, having been in the homeless youth world for over 16 years, I've seen youth come in who have struggled in this area. First of all, we have such problems in society where we stigmatize so much and dehumanize people so often, not meeting them where they're at. And I've seen instances where the youth were not met where they were at, and they've spiraled out before they were 18 and committed suicide, which is terrible. I've also seen youth who were met where they were at, who are under 18, and when they started receiving hormone therapy, the therapy that goes along with it, the support services, how they blossomed and became very successful. And that's one of the things that I would very much echo what our author is saying here, that this is really something that we really shouldn't be dealing with in this bill, but something that should be looked at maybe in a different method. But there are so many instances where I've seen where to do something like this, I would see in the world where people are already been thrown out because of where they're at by their families, is to be able to deny them some of the support would cause more
more harm than good. And I respect where you're coming from, but I also am taking a look at not what I'm only hearing from our author of the bill, but also from what I've been seeing when dealing in the world that I deal with on a regular basis. And you had had a question there. Did you have any follow-up?
No, I think that's good. This is it's a tough issue, and I think we're trying to be very understanding of the folks in the traditional thing that this is a lot to consume, and so this is important. So I appreciate the consideration of the amendment.
You're welcome. And then Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair, and Representative Hollins for your response. And I just want to say thank you to Representative Baker for your curiosity. I think that curiosity is something that we need. I think there are a lot of people in white coats here who provide this kind of care in real life to real people and could tell you what it means to provide gender-affirming care to children. And can tell you what it doesn't mean. And many of the depictions of what gender-affirming care for children that we received earlier in the description of this amendment are wrong. There's a lot of things that are being said that are factually and scientifically wrong. But if you're curious about the matters, there is a whole room of doctors and scientists willing to help us resolve those curiosities. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Finke. Not seeing any other hands up, we will go to, I want to get to the scripture so I make sure I word it properly, so thank you for your patience. We go to the to Representative Keel for closing on the amendment, and they'll go to the vote on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just implore you to think about what we are pushing here, that we are not talking about both sides of a discussion. We are talking about controlling, and we can talk about this in your bill because I would suspect this is going nowhere. But I really think we need to think about the fact that we are influencing children, allowing permanent choices for what may or may not be, as some of our medical students pointed out, that people do change. And I believe the other comment was, we are not a disorder that needs to be fixed. But that's true of children who decide differently later on, and we had a testifier that said the same thing. I was thinking one way, and then as I grew, matured, changed, I changed my mind. And so my concern is that we are allowing allowing people to children under 18 that are not developed to make decisions that are permanent. So with that, I would encourage a yes vote.
Thank you, Representative Keel. Seeing this is a roll call, we will go to having the vote taken by a roll. Mr. Margulis, Jared, if you'd like to go ahead and take the roll.
Chair Fisher?
Nay.
Vice Chair Frederick?
No.
Representative Keel?
Yes.
Representative Backer?
Backer votes yes.
Representative Baker?
Yes.
Representative Curran excused. Representative Edelson?
No.
Representative Engen?
Yes.
Representative Finke?
No.
Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Hicks?
No.
Representative Noor?
Excuse.
And Representative Navarro?
Yes.
That's 5 ayes and 6 nays. The amendment is not adopted. I will make a note, and this was by request, that Representative Curran is out due to an illness today. So I just want to have that in the record, and they had asked for me to read that in. Any further discussions on the main bill before us? Representative Backer.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. This is a question for Representative Holland. And I'm really trying to need help to understand this. We have heard passionately from Representative Finkley that this is deeply personal, and I would agree with that. These type of things are very personal. But what I find interesting, and help me understand, I sat through House File 1 and I have sat through House File 91, which deals with the changing of abortion and recording of abortion and so forth, and constantly heard during that debate that why is government inserting itself into the patient-doctor relationship? We heard that constantly. We heard it quite passionately from the author of House File 91, quite passionately. So when we talk about the abortion bills earlier, we say government needs to be out of the patient-doctor relationship. We heard several testifiers, which I appreciate from the medical school very much, about that, and other testifiers. So why, Representative Holland, is this different? Why does government, you know, why should government interfere with that patient-doctor relationship? If you could help me with that, I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Representative Holland.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Backer. What I want to point out is this bill in particular protects youth, children, and vulnerable adults. And I think that there is an established norm that we have a vested interest in protecting young people and vulnerable adults. This is far from when we were talking about adults making decisions about their bodily autonomy when it comes to abortion. This is often something that is forced upon young people by, you know, parents who maybe have their best interests at heart, but also don't fully understand the situation. And so we have many, many laws in place that are protecting young people and vulnerable individuals. And so what this bill seeks to do is nothing but extend that protection into a different realm. And I think that, you know, we could certainly look through the Minnesota statute and find a number of examples where young people, children, and vulnerable adults are a special case where we do want to make sure that they are being protected from, you know, grifters is not a nice word. There's got to be a better word for it, but bad actors.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Edelson. Back to Representative Backer. And before move, I just want to remind we've got 6 minutes left, and I do have Representative Edelson and Keel. We are going to stop all discussion at 2:30 and take the vote at that point in time, and I do want to be able to give the author of the bill a final minute or two for any closing arguments that they have. So with that, we'll go to Representative Backer for one more, then over to Representative Edelson, and then Representative Keel.
Yeah, Representative Backer. That's okay. That's okay. I've been called Backer as much as Backer. Thank you. Thank you. It's an honor to be called Backer. Okay. So, but you know, one of the things, and I'll be brief. I do want to give everybody the choice of saying their brief. You know, we are talking about vulnerable infants with abortion. So the argument still is the same. Minors don't need consent from parents in House File 1. They can have an abortion and so forth. So the argument, and I appreciate that, Representative Holland, but we're going to professionally disagree. Government, I've heard constantly on the other side of the aisle, government does not need to be in people's private doctor-patient life. This also is the same here. Thank you.
Okay, next, Representative Edelson.
Wow, this is, you know, we heard this bill, this very important bill, I'm trying to think 3 years ago, and I just want to thank everybody for being here. I know this is not an easy topic, but surprisingly, when we hear from professionals, as a therapist myself, we are licensed. When I have all of the people that I can, I mean, the children's, we have the Minnesota Medical Association, all the different professions, which we make sure as a government that they are well trained, that when they come and tell us that this therapy, which it shouldn't be called a therapy, causes harm, we genuinely have to listen to our professionals. Just like you, Representative Backer, are an EMT. When you come to the scene to protect somebody, I'm not going to tell you how to do your job. I'm going to say, you know, Mr. Backer, please help me. Conversion therapy is not science. It is not therapy, and it is harmful. And as clinicians, our job is to not do harm. And I genuinely know the conversation today ends up being about science versus religion. let's just address the elephant in the room. Yes, it does. And it's very unfortunate because when I type up, and we don't think it happens, but when I type up that into my Google search to see if I can get this sort of care, this sort of therapy, I can find it. And so I guess I would think about it in this way. Think about it in a way of consumer protections. When we look at Subdivision 7, the advertisements and misrepresentations, if somebody says that they can cure somebody, cure them from being GLBTQ, they can't do that. They cannot. And it's a misrepresentation. And actually, all the professionals and clinicians will tell you, please stop. You're doing more harm. So I will be definitely voting for your bill today. And I want to thank you. And I'm so glad that we actually might be able to pass this bill this year.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. We'll go to Representative Keel, and then we'll be going to the author for closing comments, seeing we are coming up against the clock. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hollins, isn't physical harm already illegal? It just occurred to me, we're talking about what can happen, but literally physical harm would be illegal for a child.
Representative Hollins.
I guess I could just nod. Yes, technically.
So, Mr. Chair and
Representative Keel, go ahead.
Thank you. So we're double downing on first. I want to see children protected. This is not my idea that we're going to change someone's mind, but I am very concerned that a child would go in and talk to somebody, say at a school counselor or whatever, and have a conversation, and all of a sudden we've got a school counselor, somebody in trouble because of the conversation they had privately in their office, and all of a sudden this bill is going to make them charged illegally, that would create a problem. Are we putting the ability for counselors that are licensed, that are required to follow the law for mental health, are we putting them in danger of not being able to listen to a child or talk to them or anybody, a vulnerable adult, anybody that would they be being put in a bad position by putting this law into effect?
Is that a question for? Yeah. Okay.
Sorry.
Representative Hollins.
No. I think your question. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Keel. I don't quite understand the nuance of your question, but what I will say is conversion therapy, as you've heard from testifiers today, is not merely having a conversation with somebody about, you know, I have a question about my sexuality, I'm not sure what's happening. It is systematic, long-term torture to an individual, whether that torture is psychological, emotional, or physical. It is not something that any of the counselors that have spoken today or that have testified previously or that wrote letters in or any of the counseling organizations have expressed any concerns that their members would not be able to provide counseling services to young people because of a conversion therapy ban. So I don't think that that's a legitimate concern from any professional organization or professional who provides that sort of services on a legitimate basis.
Thank you, Representative Holland. We are up at the last couple of minutes here, so I will go to the testifier for, to Representative Holland for
Chair
argument. Yes.
We are asking for a roll call. I forgot to mention that earlier.
Sure. Noted that there will be a roll call on this. So I will go to Representative Hollins if you'd like to make closing comments, and then we'll go to the roll call.
Thank you, Chair Fisher. I will be very brief. I want to thank the committee members for the discussion. I especially want to thank our testifiers today who bravely shared stories that were both painful and disturbing. I want to say that as a queer woman who has had the opportunity to live what I would call a moderately successful life, and certainly very fulfilling, I can assure you that being loved and valued for exactly who you are allows you to thrive. This bill will help ensure that LGBTQ plus minors are protected from harmful practices that diminish their self-worth. And that's all I want for LGBTQ folks in the state of Minnesota. I want them to know that they are fine just the way they are. In fact, they're more than fine. They are fabulous and that they are loved. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hollins. With that, I renew my motion that House File 16, as amended, be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee.
Chair, I withdraw my roll call.
You withdraw your okay,
roll. Mr. Chair, I call for a roll call.
Representative Ellison calls for a roll call, so there will be a roll call. Legislative Assistant Margulis, please take the roll.
Chair Fisher.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick.
Aye.
Lead Representative Keel.
No.
Representative Backer.
No.
Representative Baker.
No.
Representative Kern is excused. Representative Edelson.
Aye.
Representative Eng.
No.
Representative Kinkey.
Yeah.
Representative Hansen.
Yes.
Representative Hicks.
Yes.
Representative Noor.
Yes.
Representative Novotny.
There being seven ayes and five noes, the bill as amended is approved and will be going to Health and Finance Committee. I want to thank you. Can I have some order, please? I want to thank everybody for being involved today for the testimony. For those who are not able to be here, please make sure to submit written testimony to our committee administrator. Seeing there is no more business before our committee today, we stand adjourned.